The House Judiciary Committee will be called to order at 10 minutes after 1 on February 27th, 2002. On today's calendar, I could very quickly take up HGR 15, Constitutional Amendment, Permanent Fund, HB 213, HGR 25. Move those along to the next committee referral, the Finance Committee. Then we'll be taking up HB 350, Terrorist Threats, and HB 328, Terrorist Threatening Pipeline Damage. Hopefully, we can do this very expeditiously. The Chair would entertain a motion on the C version of the CS for House Joint Resolution 15.
Council move.
Are there any objections to moving HGR 15? Seeing none.
Just a note, it's amazing we can move a constitutional amendment and nobody, it's like the tree falling in the woods.
I would just say that we've had, I think, at least 4 hearings on this thing. It's time for it to move along before it gathers more moss on its north side.
Getting it out of here.
So ordered and moved. Next, I'd like to take up HGR 23. Oh, excuse me, HGR 25, that is. This needs to find a home up in the Judiciary Committee. On the right version here.
Which one is it?
Heck is this?
I don't think there is. We didn't.
It's the A version.
Yeah, it is the A version. We didn't have a committee substitute.
Yeah, the other one probably had a fiscal note. It's the constitutional amendment had a fiscal note. This one didn't.
Yes, it does.
And so I back up and move the fiscal note.
We just assume you guys do that, unless you say otherwise.
We act like the Senate, huh? Okay. Representative James.
Oh, yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move, wait, I got the wrong one. Hold on.
Sure.
HGR 25.
Any objection?
From committee with individual recommendations.
That's fiscal note.
I object.
Objection.
We have discussion.
You missed that part.
Oh, you already did.
You want to hold, do you want to speak to your objection?
No.
Okay.
But I want to know why he was opposing or objecting to moving it. I don't think there's a problem, and I don't think we need to go into the Constitution to fix what isn't a problem.
Very good.
Very good.
And the chairman wants to move this up to his committee, the next committee referral.
Very good.
Sue, could you take the roll, please?
Representative Coghill.
Yes.
Representative Meyer.
Yes.
Representative Berkowitz.
No.
Representative Kukesh is absent. Representative James.
Yes.
Representative Ogun is absent. Representative Roper.
Yes. Votes 4-1, and therefore passed. Now we have before us HB 213. It's the original form.
Same thing except the statute, correct?
Right.
I move House Bill 213 out of committee with individual recommendations.
That's fiscal notes. Any objections?
Object.
Would the clerk please read the roll, please?
Representative Meyer.
Yes.
Representative Berkowitz.
No.
Representative Kukesh is absent. Representative James.
Yes.
Representative Ogun is absent. Representative Coghill.
Yes.
Representative Roper.
Yes.
4-1.
Thank you. So ordered and moved. Take a very brief at ease.
Why does he have to get the last word? He has to grab the gavel.
Come back to order, right. Now I'd like to take up House Bill. Before I do that, the chair would like to recognize that Representative Kukesh has joined us, and we also have, I did take the roll, did I? We have been joined by Representatives Berkowitz, Meyer, Coghill, Roeckberg, and James, and now Representative Kukesh for a quorum. We do have a quorum to do business. And with that, let's take up House Bill 350, Terroristic Threats. Representative McGuire.
Thank you, Chairman.
Welcome back to your old judiciary hunt.
Thank you, Chairman Roeckberg and members of the Judiciary Committee. It is good to be back before you. I've missed being on this committee this year, but follow your actions closely. House Bill 350 in front of you, the Transportation Committee substitute, essentially adds to existing statute. We already have criminal mischief in the first degree, and we've added tampering with water to that. We also have terroristic threatening, which is a Class C felony. And all we're doing in that case, and I'm referencing for everybody's information, Section 2 on page 2, starting at line 7, we're simply adding to it public area, mode of public transportation, and then the disruption of a schedule of an entity providing transportation services. And finally, in Section 2, you'll see that we've added language to the existing Class C felony to address the issue of gas pipelines supporting utilities in transportation or cargo facilities. Mr. Chairman, I would submit this legislation, much like the legislation that you'll hear directly following this, is simply an attempt by the state of Alaska to revisit its statutes and update them to address many of the events that have occurred on September 11th and some of the potential for new crimes out there that people may not have anticipated. I think that our body of statutes already have some things in them that address potential crimes and problems, and all we're doing is strengthening them to address potential problems. And I would ask for the committee's support and take any questions that you have at this time. And Representative Berkowitz, I understand, had a question regarding whether a power plant would fall under the definition of utility, and the answer is yes.
Questions of the bill sponsor? Mr. McGuire, I know you looked at the House Bill 328
yep.
in terms of like its provisions in your bill, Section 1. It has a change on what's line 15, page 1 of your bill. It changes the intentional damages standard to tampers with, which is not standard at all. Would you, have you had a chance to look at that?
Yeah, I have. Representative Roper, I have had a chance to look at that. That's, and I'm sure Annie Carpinetti will want to testify on that. I do have a little bit of concern with that, given that it changes that mental state from intentionally, which I think is a good state to have. I'm concerned about the tampers with language. But again, given that this is our first opportunity to hear the two together as a merge, I'm sure she would want to have an opportunity to comment on that.
And then
I would prefer it to remain as intentional damages.
They also include the aircraft and helicopters. Do you think that's a good addition?
Actually, I do. Representative Rookberg, I'm comfortable with that language, and I think it's highly appropriate.
I do take note that they, after the tampers with, they add back a reckless disregard right. standard. So.
Again, you would have to, I think, keeping with the intentional standard would be better.
Any further
so
questions?
I guess you could modify it by up to the committee, but I would keep the intentional language in.
I'm sorry, I'm losing track. Where are
Representative Berkowitz?
I'm trying to track those.
Page 2, Representative Berkowitz. Actually, Representative Rookberg was referencing House Bill 328, page 2, line 31, subsection 3 there. And it begins with the person tampers with, as opposed to the old language, which was intentionally damages.
But then later on the next page, it adds the reckless disregard for the risk of harm or loss of the property standard. So. Okay.
And this is under the C felony?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions? Let's see, on the 10 provisions.
Just in wrap-up, Representative Rookberg, obviously the legislature is charged with continuing to monitor our statutes and make sure that they address current events that have occurred and changed in our world, and certainly September 11th was a big deal, and it's my intent, and I believe the governor's intent in his bill as well, to simply bring our statutes up to date.
In your second section, the governor's bill creates a new crime, I think, and yours does not. It just expands it. Is that correct?
Representative Rookberg, can you tell me which section you're referring to?
Section 2 of your bill.
Yes. Section 2 of my bill does not create a new crime. It simply adds to... it simply adds to the crime of terroristic threatening that already exists, which is a Class C felony. So I guess you could argue that it's a new crime in the sense that if you meet the elements of report, making a false report of a circumstance that exists or is about to exist, that would be a new crime. But the statutory framework, as you can see, is already there for that to be a Class C felony. So what we're doing is really just adding that in making that false report, that if you cause an evacuation of a public area or a mode of public transportation, that you can also be charged with a Class C felony.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. Any further questions of the sponsor? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Parker. It's my intent to return to Resources Committee, if that's okay. And
we'll handle it for you.
Thank you.
Further, does anybody else wish to testify at House Bill 350?
Is Copernetti coming up?
No, we'll wait. Well, let's, at this juncture, I'm going to lay House Bill 350 on the table for further activity, and then go to the public hearing on HB 328. So if we take up House file for House Bill 328, Ms. Carpenini.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Annie Carpenetti. I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. House Bill 328 originated with the other administration's bills dealing with terroristic threats that have occurred in our country. This particular bill was drafted as a result of meetings by district attorneys throughout the state, considering what were the possibilities for terroristic acts in our state, and what we could do to make our statutes more responsive to those possibilities. And like the other bills, they do focus on what I guess was considered the most vulnerable part, property in our state, and that's the oil and gas, our oil pipeline and the supporting facilities. And the bill does the following things, and please interrupt me if you have a question. Intentionally damaging an oil or gas pipeline or supporting facility is now a Class B felony, which carries a maximum of 10 years incarceration under criminal mischief in the first degree. Considering the possibility of harm to the state if there was an intentional damage committed to the pipeline, we changed this to a Class A felony. It's the exact same crime in current law, but it was elevated to a Class A felony. Tampering with an oil or gas pipeline or supporting facility is currently a Class C felony under criminal mischief in the second degree. We raised this to a Class B felony, and it has the same culpable mental state of reckless disregard to damage. The bill also provides that making a false threat to damage an oil or gas pipeline or supporting facility is a Class C felony under terroristic threatening in what would be the second degree, and that is an additional crime that would be created by this bill. Under current law, it's a Class B felony, criminal mischief in the first degree, to tamper with food or drugs or cosmetics, or a container for food or drugs or cosmetics, with the intent to cause physical injury to another person. This bill adds tampering with a person's water supply or a container for water supply to those to that same prohibition. The bill also adds enacts terroristic threatening in the first degree, which is in the bill in the draft you have in front of you would be a Class B felony to send an imitation chemical or biological substance and cause serious physical injury, evacuation of a building. It mirrors the present law of terroristic threatening, only it makes it more serious to do so by sending an imitation biological or chemical substance.
I mean, where is that? Is that Section 7 or is that...
That is, yes, I believe it is Section 7.
Okay. Please continue.
And it also adds to terroristic threatening in current law, which is a Class C felony, which would become second-degree terroristic threatening, the prohibition of making a false threat to send an imitation chemical or biological substance that is harmful to persons. And this is a Class C felony. And also it makes various conforming amendments that can be really confusing, I think, to a reader of a bill. But I'll be happy to explain the conforming amendments if you'd like me to.
So what have we done here in terms of the whole interplay of terroristic threatening as a crime? We've created a new first-degree level?
New level of terroristic threatening.
Then we've taken our previous statute and made that second-degree and then added to it? Is that?
Yes, that's correct. And we've raised the penalties for causing harm to a oil or gas pipeline or supporting facility for first to a Class A felony for intentionally causing damage, and to a Class B felony for tampering with gas pipeline facility.
Are you done with your testimony yet?
Well, actually, we did have a suggested amendment that should be in your packets, and if you'd like me to address that now, I'd be happy to. Otherwise, I'll be happy to wait.
Let's see, wait a minute.
Should be at the back of your packet.
The back of the packet?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And these were suggested as a result of continuing conversations with the...
Is that the one that says from the Department of Law?
Yes.
And it's three pages, four pages long, three pages? I missed that one somewhere. Sorry.
I could wait and explain it later if you'd like.
Oh, we're in a hurry.
Okay.
Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. It does two things. It amends our conspiracy law to provide that it would be a crime to conspire to cause damage, to intentionally damage an oil or gas pipeline, or to conspire to commit terroristic threatening in the first degree, or to conspire to commit criminal mischief in the first degree, such as tampering with the food or water supply, or tampering with an oil or gas pipeline. It also does another thing, which
is that the sub four, or yeah, like those four and five.
Section one, and it changes the conspiracy law in on your amendment by changing the definition of serious felony offense for the purpose of the conspiracy law.
I'm trying to read this and listen at the same time.
I'm not following either. Yeah. Conspiracy.
Right. Could you start back here at Section 1? Is that the existing statute?
Are you looking
statute?
At the amendment?
I'm looking at the amendment, yeah.
Okay.
31.
Section 1 amends AS 1131-120I2 by amending the definition of serious felony offense, which would include these particular offenses, intentional damage to an oil or gas pipeline facility, terroristic threatening in the first degree, or criminal mischief in the first degree, as crimes for which a person could be charged with conspiring to commit. And the rationale is that terrorists generally act in groups rather than individually.
But the conspiracy is based on what, some of the citations here of the existing statutes, or what?
Well, our conspiracy law is found in 1131-120 of our statutes, and it prohibits...
Okay, so these are all underneath the conspiracy. I didn't have a chance to look at this.
That you took, Cliff?
My apologies for not being on top of it.
Well, the rationale is that, as we have seen, terrorists don't act individually; they act in groups, and they, I think would it's prudent to provide that it would be against the law, and to qualify as a conspiracy, two or more people have to agree to commit a crime, and one person has to take a step in furtherance of the commission of that crime.
Just in the language, then, is that why you say a person acting with one or more? I wondered why the one or more persons instead of just saying other persons.
Where are you? Which?
Well, you're in another section. Though.
Yeah, I was kind of zooming ahead of you.
Right, that's not section right. One. The 1131.120 is the conspiracy statute. So does that. For everybody's clarification, that's what we were driving at, right? So I understand that now. So let's go on to section two.
Of the amendment.
Of the amendment, yeah.
The amendment also adds to murder in the first degree, two ways that a person could be convicted of murder in the first degree, and that is acting alone or with other people. The person commits intentional damage to an oil or gas pipeline, and in the course of that offense or an immediate flight from it causes the death of another person other than one of the participants. And that's a felony murder theory that the state could charge murder in the first degree for somebody who, for example, set a fire to an oil pipeline and a worker was killed as a result without having to prove that the defendant intentionally caused the death of that person, which is the traditional theory of murder in the first degree. It also adds to murder in the first degree a felony murder theory that a person commits terroristic threatening to another person and in the course of or immediate flight from that crime causes the death of another person is caused by any person other than one of the participants. And that would allow the state to charge a person with murder in the first degree even though there's not proof that the person actually intended to kill that individual, but if the person committed the underlying crime, such as intentionally causing damage to an oil or gas pipeline, and somebody is killed in the furtherance of the crime or immediate flight from it.
So if he was escaping from the scene of this terroristic act and killed somebody in a vehicular accident, if you will.
That's correct. It has to be pretty immediate, pretty close to the crime, but yes.
Is that what the intention was there? What kind of a scenario? Was that the scenario you were thinking of? Or?
Scenario is a person blowing up a pipeline facility and people getting killed and us not having the proof that they actually intended to kill people, but they intended to cause harm to the facility.
But it's based on a pretty typical felony murder rule type thing, which we don't have in Alaska, though, as a statute.
Actually, we do. We do. We have felony murder in the first degree and in the second degree based on various...
Oh, we do. Okay, good.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brookwitz.
Before we get involved in the amendment, you know, I look at this, and there's some incongruities between the A felony to propose about damaging an oil pipeline and the B felony. I mean, you could be in a situation where someone could be charged with an A felony, for example, by tearing down a fence at an oil or gas pipeline support facility. I mean, it's an intentional crime, right? It's an A felony. And at the same time, someone could blow up a power plant, and that's a B felony. And I think the incongruity I see is when we carve out an exception for oil or gas pipeline or supporting facility, what we're really trying to say is this is the type of facility that the state places a lot of importance on. And if we could find a way of generalizing that language so we would have the A felony option available more broadly, and in essence, there's more discretion, I think that's a better kind of law than being as specific as we are by specifying oil or gas pipeline or supporting facility.
And for the Class A felony offense? Well, you know, excuse me, through the chair, on the Senate side, at their first committee of reference, they, instead of making only intentionally damaging an oil or gas pipeline the Class A felony, they made all the conduct covered in criminal mischief in the first degree a Class A felony. And that seems to me what you're suggesting.
Well, I mean, there's reasons why, if I could, Mr. Chair, why you want to have gradations in charging. But there's also needs to be recognition in the law that there's certain facilities that are so essential to the community, whether it's power plants or water supplies, or in the case of Alaska, gas and hopefully gas pipelines, but oil pipelines, that we want to take special care of them. And there ought to be a way of generalizing the language, which would allow more discretion in the charging circumstances. And also there is the danger that I raised here, which is, you know, if someone tears down a fence, all of a sudden they're an A felon.
Well, through the chair, it would certainly be charged not as a Class A felony.
I don't know. With all due respect, we dealt with cases in here the other day where people were making left turn and were being charged with evasion, which I think was
eluding.
A felony. Eluding.
Felony eluding, so, right.
Having been a prosecutor, I will tell you that there are folks that use their discretion well, and there are folks that use their discretion in an effort to force charge bargaining, and I don't think that's not appropriate for us to give them that kind of latitude.
Was there a lesser included crime under this?
Well, yes. I mean,
apparently you're referring to Section 2 of the bill, right?
Section 2 of the bill creates damaging an oil or gas pipeline or supporting facility, which is right now in our law, only it's a Class B felony.
Well, this makes it a Class A felony.
This makes it a Class A felony.
Right, that's what Representative Berkowitz was speaking to, though.
And then from present law, which is tampering with an oil or gas pipeline facility, brought that up from a C felony to a B felony in Section 3 of the bill. And then the bill also adds to terroristic threatening in the second degree, making false claims of harm or threats against it. And that's a Class C felony. So there are gradations of conduct in certainly charging discretion amongst those.
Representative Berkowitz, are you done with this line of questioning? Because we didn't really finish the amendment.
No, I'm not done, but I didn't mean to interrupt. It just seemed...
You did interrupt the...
I intended to interrupt, but I didn't mean to.
The Assistant Attorney General in making her presentation.
Reckless. I was reckless with that.
You were reckless, right. If we could go back then, Ms. Carpinetti, to, I believe, which would be page 3 of the amendment, which cites page 4, line 7. If you could start there, I think that's where we're at.
Yes, that was at the suggestion of Jerry Luckup. Currently, the bill provides that it's terroristic threatening in the first degree to send an imitation biological or chemical substance with intent to cause fear or evacuate a building or cause serious public inconvenience. He asked us what would happen if you sent real anthrax or something like that, and you didn't harm anybody physically, but you caused the same damage in terms of causing fear or evacuating a building or causing serious physical injury. And I think he was correct, and that's why this amendment is here, because if you send the real thing and it doesn't hurt anybody, that's just as dangerous as more so than sending an imitation biological or chemical substance. So if they do send a real anthrax and it harms somebody, then we have other possibilities for charging, such as assault. But that's why that amendment is suggested.
That's only a Class B felony for sending anthrax?
Yes, and not harming a person physically, but causing...
My point.
Don't breathe too hard now, Reverend James.
Mr. Chair, while we're discussing that section, I'd point out that I'm going to have an amendment on
okay.
that section.
Okay, good.
And then the final amendment is a conforming amendment defining both terms for terroristic threatening in the first degree.
A chemical and biological substance means a material that is harmful to the health of a person?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little weak, isn't it?
I'm going to fix that, too.
Oh, okay. Good.
It really depends on how specific you want to be. If you want to, you know, maybe it would be best to say cause a serious physical injury rather than physical injury. That's another option for defining chemical or biological substance.
We don't even need to go there, Mr. Chair.
Right. Okay. Good.
Patients.
Right.
Doctors, not for lawyers.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment? Mr. Krakow, you had that one.
That's right. It was just the doctor.
Well, any questions of the Attorney General?
Thank you.
Representative. You're not off the hook yet, but that's okay. You can sit down. Are there anyone else that wishes to testify on House Bill 328? So, there's nobody on the line?
Okay.
Anybody else? My goodness.
Nobody cares.
We have no terrorists here to testify on this. How can this be? We're not getting the other side of the issue.
Apologize for Representative Oldenburg.
That's $5 for cracking a joke.
$5. Yeah, I'll give you the $5.
Really? Okay. Well, Annie, he can come back up. Now, let's see.
Mr. Chair, could I move my amendment on just focusing on Section 807, which is Section 7 in the bill?
Let's see. Is that more appropriate than moving the department's amendment first? What order would we want to do this?
Yes. It
doesn't.
I don't think it makes much difference.
Doesn't? Okay.
But you're going to need to have conforming amendments.
Right.
It appears to me that maybe the best, my suggestion is that we agree on these kinds of issues. Seems to me like the only way you're really going to get this in here is with a good CS.
But we're going to do a CS.
But they're going to overlap some, I think.
Well, let's try to wade through that so we can have directions to the drafter. And we're not going to move the bill today. We'll go through it and massage it as best we can, as rapidly as we can, and so we can give as clear as instructions as possible to the drafter.
I hope he's taking good notes.
Well, thanks to the homework done by Representative Berkowitz, maybe it will be somewhat helpful in clarifying some of this work here.
I wish I could take credit for it, Mr. Chair, but I've got excellent staff work on this, so.
Right. Well, with that.
Prodded accordingly.
We'll mark Representative Berkowitz's amendment as amendment number one. Representative Berkowitz.
What we've done here is.
You want to move your amendment?
I move amendment one. Someone wants to
talk. I'll object. So
okay. With 807, instead of talking about the delivery means, an envelope, package, or other item, or imitation biological or chemical substance, that seems to me to be a lot of extra words. So let's just talk about you send any substance. And if you're worried about a false report generating the kind of terror, then just say or make a false report about that substance. That's why the body of what we suggest is different from the governor's package. As for the itemized portions below, where you place a person in fear, that's the same. The language we used, causing evacuation of a building, public assembly, public transportation facility, or causing serious public inconvenience, that tracks the language that most states use, which is also parallel to what the Model Penal Code uses in discussing terroristic threatening. There's still a B felony. And then what we also came up with is that a person who's convicted of terroristic threatening may be sentenced to pay restitution in an amount equal to the cost of evacuation caused by the threatening.
You had circulated earlier this other page.
Yeah, this is from the Model Penal Code.
And unfortunately, apparently...
Adopted by how many states?
I don't know how many states have adopted it, but just the preliminary research that we did shows that a number of states, including, I think, Hawaii and Kentucky, just sort of quick reference, had used it in... Yeah, the commentaries were stolen. So we don't...
Stolen?
A law library is not a safe place.
Okay.
So that's what we did with 807. With 810, which is Section 8, with the, it's the terroristic bill. Threatening in the second. Our difference is... we just the language is more general. It's life, health, or property is threatened, and then we used the analogous with the parallel language to 807, and also imposed restitution. It's fewer words. Fewer words tend to be better. You know, I prosecuted someone once under this statute, and I think I'm probably one of the few people who has. And it's a very awkward statute the way it is. And the more words that get thrown in, the more opportunity there is to hang up a case. As I recall, what the case I worked on, someone had called in a bomb threat to Hope Cottages up in Anchorage. And they weren't able to effect a complete evacuation because some of the people there were so incapacitated that they couldn't get them out of the building in time by the time that the bomb squad came and said it's okay. So there was an issue about whether there was an evacuation. So, you know, these...
Oh, I don't believe that. The defense attorney asserted that?
The jury saw through it, of course.
Well, I hope so.
But that just highlights the danger of leaving unnecessary words in a statute, and which is why I think the language is cleaner about just talking about any substance. We don't know. We talked about biological or chemical. What would that do for radioactive? I don't know what category that fits in. What if it's not really harmful? There's all kinds of possibilities that might get argued.
Well, I'd hate to have a false report about getting a peanut butter cheesecake or something. I
mean, but would that put a person in fear of physical injury? No.
What if they're
depends on what their diet is.
But if you knew, if you knew that there were people who were allergic to peanuts, then of course it could be.
Right. So the your. I know the administration uses the litany of a building, public place, and business premises, as opposed to your place of assembly.
The reason why I think that's preferable is if we use language that other states use, that other jurisdictions use, then there's more clarity in what we're talking about. Probably the impact is the same.
But for the record, your testimony would be that the place of assembly would include those specified in the administration's language. Would that be correct?
You know, I was thinking of instances that might not be the same.
Well, public place and business premise specifically, where would they not be part of a place of assembly?
Well, for example, let me give you, if someone's working at a nonprofit, is that a business?
Well, my question is, would those places, a public place or a business premise, be included within your definition
yes.
of a place of assembly? That's
yes.
what I wanted to get on the
yes.
record. Right.
Yes. Mr. Chairman. Right.
Representative James.
I just want to say that I agree with the concept that Representative Berkowitz is talking about here because of my own personal experience. When you try to list too many things and you leave something out, then you're finding yourself in a...
Right.
in a real loophole. So I think the rationale that he's going for is good, so long as we have the definition that was all reaching.
Huh. Ms. Carpenter, have you seen this Representative Berkowitz's amendment?
I just was given it. And I really agree that the clearer you write, the better. So I think we can... But the problem is with this, and the concept, there's a different concept here, and that is terroristic threatening in the first degree in this bill applies to actions. It doesn't apply to false threats. Terroristic threatening in the second degree, or what is presently terroristic threatening, applies to false threats. So the first, there is a difference in conduct. One is an action and one is a verbal threat. And so that's a little bit of concern I have, that you make the false report a Class B felony, whereas threats about other things are Class C felonies. I'm very concerned about the term substance. I mean, I understand wanting to use general terms, but we would have to define that because this is a criminal law and people need to be on notice as to what is against the law to a certain extent, what conduct is acceptable and what is not. And that would be difficult to do, to define substance, but I'm certainly happy to work on it.
Would biological or chemical, would radiological be included within biological or chemical?
I believe so, yes. But you would have to, I really believe if you wanted to use substance alone, you would have to define it.
Well, we better refer to a CBR manual. That's not the Constitutional Budget Reserve. That's chemical, biological, radiological weapons.
Well,
Department of Defense, how do they write?
It's pretty general. The first concern I see is that in right now in Class B felony under this proposed amendment, you have verbal threats and actions. And I think it might be more logical to have actions in as a higher degree, a higher level of crime, as opposed to threats. Because this would cover as a Class D felony, B felony, a lot of conduct that... And as I've said before, we do exercise, hopefully wisely, our discretion in charging, but you want to have them have our criminal laws as specific and as possible and give notice as clearly as possible to people as to what is against the law. And making a false threat about any substance is pretty broad, and I guess maybe I'd like to have some time to give some thought.
Just on that point.
Representative Berkowitz.
Because what we're saying is, it's not just making any false report. It's not saying this is a bit saying what if there's a false report that there's anthrax in the mail. How is the consequence any different from there actually being anthrax in the mail? The impact of either action, one action being the delivery, the other action being the false report about a delivery, is the same. And I think we want to make clear to people that under certain circumstances, that speech is conduct.
Well, through the chair, I agree with you that it's that under in terms of the public inconvenience and those harms, it is similar harm. But if it's real anthrax as opposed to imitation anthrax, the potential harm to people is a lot higher, I think. I mean, I think there's a difference there.
But it was only a joke.
Well, there's a lot of discussion about that in the right. Commentaries I've seen to other states, and that's always a defense. I was just kidding. But a false report can, just the same as a real a true report, place a person in fear. It can cause evacuation. It can cause public inconvenience.
Could cause people to get hurt as well.
Through the chair, that's correct, and that is a Class C felony under our current law. And the question is whether a false report under those circumstances ought to be a Class B felony along with actually sending it. And I think there is a qualitative difference in that conduct from the threat to the actual sending.
If I could ask, the restitution provision?
That shouldn't be here. It needs to be in Title 12, and I think we already are able to do that, but it wouldn't hurt to make some provision in Title 12 specifying that harm is We're working on restitution statutes all the time.
Sub C is not in the existing statute?
No.
Oh, so this is not drafted in the correct format? Your amendment?
I'm shocked.
I don't know who's responsible, but we'll deal with them later.
I would hope so. Are you trying to...
I would say...
Subsection C is not, in your amendment, is not of Section 2, is not part of the existing statute.
It is not part of existing statute, no.
But it may be a part of existing law by, under Title 12,
no.
as the cost of...
well, it's not existing law under...
For ordering restitution.
If that were the sole test, we wouldn't be having this discussion at all today.
Right. Because in the... Right, it's cut off there. Oh, wait a minute. Well, not.
And one other really minor comment I would... Well, it's not too minor, but in terms of life, health, or property under Section 12, right now terrorist threatening deals with... makes a false report that something is dangerous to human life exists, which is a more general term, but now we're adding property, and that's something I would like to think about. But I would be happy to work with Representative Berkowitz and the drafter in trying to put this into one bill, all these things into one bill.
No, in the committee, right. But we would like to have, I think, I'd like to have more direction from the committee on which direction we want to go, though. So the administration supports a three-part criminal act, and I understand that. That's what your bill has right now.
You mean in terms of damage to the pipeline?
Right. No, in terms of what terroristic threatening is.
No, we support two levels of offense.
Okay, well, then you have the damage to the pipeline as the first level of...
the property section of our criminal law. This is a different section, terroristic threatening.
Okay, so it's a two-tiered first and second degree offense.
And you know,
and your testimony is that the false report should be part of the second degree, not the first degree.
I believe so.
Right.
Yes. And I would make one more comment about place of assembly. That may be used in other state statutes, but to my knowledge, it isn't used in our criminal law. I would prefer using a term that is more familiar to our criminal law and is used in other places. But you could always use a term like this and then define it. Because a place of assembly could be a street corner where people stop and cross the street.
Ball field.
Pardon?
A ball field or stadium.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that would probably be a public facility anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not.
Public place. The governor's bill says public place, place of assembly. They're terms that I would like to think about because I hesitate to put new terms into our Title 11 that are unfamiliar without giving some thought to whether...
It doesn't hurt if they do it to a private place, like an apartment building or a...
Well, building is already included.
Buildings are included.
Yeah, building is included. So when we added public place, business premises, or means of public transportation, in terms of business premises, we weren't thinking about an office or a nonprofit corporation. We were thinking about the grounds of business premises, like in a, you know, you have a nursery or something, and you've got a building, and you've got plants outside. Those are the considerations that we were.
Well, frankly, and Representative Berkowitz, if you don't mind, I would like to get some these input from the committee about what their consensus would be on that. I mean, basically, what you've commingled the false report into the Class B felony or the first degree offense.
And also dealt with the substance issue.
Well, that's a second. I mean, and the, well, that's, I think about it. I consider that basically a definitional or a separate issue at this juncture. I think let's talk about the false report issue, because that has to do with the level of crime we're talking about. That's the knowingly giving a false report is the foundation for second degree the way the bill is written. The distinction you're making in the amendment is you have a false report about the substance. Is that correct? So that's not crying fire. It's crying fire is in the second one. You'd have to actually do an act or make a false report about a substance. Which, you know, I mean, I'm not real comfortable with that.
But the difference also is different between intentionally making a false report and knowingly making.
Well, there's a slight standard shift there.
Well, you're making the false report, if I could, with the intent to do something, and under my proposed version. I mean, we want people to evacuate the building. You want someone to evacuate the building, you make a false report, so therefore they have to evacuate the building. As opposed to the second, in 810, the C felony, you knowingly make a false report, and you may or may not intend any of the consequences.
Well, I appreciate the distinction there between the knowingly standard and the intent standard, but anybody else have a comment on this? Well, I think I side with the administration on this one. taking the false report out of the, and just make it the act.
Had this been what it takes, I think I would have opposed the administration more often.
Oh. Only in your wildest dreams. Well, that's an issue. Put that down as an issue.
Okay.
Right.
I second it.
Mr. Chair, right. I do have a question. So if you have a constituent who's upset at you, they make a bomb threat on your house, how does that fall in here? Is that a Class C terroristic attack, Class C felony? I'm not sure where that falls.
In which you are you asking?
Yes, that'd be fine.
In which bill?
Either one. I'm not sure. Under, well, I guess under Representative Berkowitz's amendments, I'm not sure where that falls.
Through the chair, I believe if it was a false threat, I think a bomb would be included in the term substance. That would be a Class B felony. But correct me if I'm wrong. Under the administration's bill, making a false threat would be a Class C felony under second degree.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. Wouldn't the bomb threat be a first degree under the way you just described it?
Well, I guess it would depend. Maybe it would, actually. I stand corrected. Imitation, biological, or chemical substance. Would a bomb be considered that? I don't think we were thinking about that when we were drafting it, but...
Oh, not the most common one. Right. Yeah. Unless there's a separate statute on bomb threats that we're not aware of here? No? So. Okay, good.
Well, I mean, yeah. We
can agree on that.
That one touches home kind of close.
Yeah, right.
Are you having these problems?
I did have. Yeah, and the person was convicted of a Class C felony, so I was just wondering.
Terrorism threatening in the second degree.
Right, yeah, somebody called and had threatened to blow up our house, or had said that a bomb had been planted in our house, so of course we took it seriously.
Sure.
Because I would go through the differences would be if you were in Juneau at the time, you're not in physical fear because you're not there. You didn't have to evacuate because you weren't there, and it didn't really cause serious public inconvenience because it was your private house. And, so
that's excused.
Uh-huh.
If it's a false report.
But if it wasn't false.
Well, you have to put it would apply if it puts any person in fear. Puts a person in fear of physical injury to any person. So if there was anybody around the house, it might. Right. But I see your point.
Well, I can tell you, if he notified him when he was down here and his house was up there, he'd be fearful.
Well, we were really afraid because we were living in the house at the time. So,
well, okay. Representative James, I believe, had a question, and I do too. I'd like to talk about the word substance as it relates to actual imitation, biological, chemical, etc. Representative Berkowitz has made the argument that a single word substance would give rise, if it's done in an intentional and or knowingly threatening way. I'm not so sure that's true. I mean, if I can threaten to send you my cheesecake, is that threatening?
What about throwing a pie in somebody's face?
Right.
If I could on that, because the
Representative Berkowitz.
The amendment specifies that a material that is harmful to the health of a person. Well, I would make a case, for example, you use tear gas. That's not harmful to someone's health, is it?
Well, are we looking at your amendment now?
I think so.
Well, is there long-term health consequences? Would they use it if there were?
There could be.
Are we going to subject the police to suit if they use those? But what if you use something that didn't have a long-term effect, but it just had an effect? Didn't affect your health. All of a sudden, you're inviting questions of proof. Does this really affect someone's health, or is it just incapacitate them temporarily?
Well, through the chair, I can see your concern with the definition, and it may need tightening up, but I have more concern with the use of the term substance than that, which is at least limited in some regard.
Where's the definition? Representative Berkowitz, where's your definition? I'm having trouble looking.
This is in the amendment on the last page. I didn't define...
What? Where?
In the Department of
Laws. Oh, Department of Laws amendment.
Yeah. I didn't define substance. I could probably look it up and see if it has a definition. It might well have one. So.
Well, I'm sure it has a Webster's definition, unless you want a legal definition.
It might have an Alaska statutory
definition. Controlled substance does. But I don't think substance does.
Yeah, uncontrolled substance. Huh.
They make their own these days.
I don't know. This thing is getting messier all the time. See what you did. Take a brief edit. Your question again, because I wanted to have that on the pipeline.
Okay. With the pipeline situation, the conversation we had the other day indicated because of double jeopardy, the state's interpretation of double jeopardy, we would not pursue a case if another sovereign pursued a case first. So this fellow that shot the pipeline is now being prosecuted in federal court. It would seem under the argument that I heard, the way I understood it, the state would not be pursuing a case against him.
Through the chair, this is what I learned today, and I have actually the charging document. The federal government is charging him with being a felon in possession of a firearm, mm-hmm. not damage to the pipeline. The damage to the pipeline charges are being pursued by us, by the state of Alaska, scheduled for trial in September. The trial that we hear about on the radio these days is the federal government prosecuting him being a felon in possession of a firearm.
If I could, are there federal statutes that they could have used, but because of some accommodation between the state and the federal government, the feds opted to step aside and let the state pursue the prosecution?
Through the chair, there could be. I don't know if there was any agreement that they would prosecute that. That is against our law, too, being a felon in possession of a concealable firearm. But since the federal government is prosecuting that offense, we would not do so.
I would assume there is a criminal statute against the damage to an interstate pipeline, so I imagine there was an accommodation there.
I just can't answer whether there was some agreement. I don't know.
I would hope there was.
Well, I would. I just don't know. But I know we are charging
first regulated
with damaging the pipeline under criminal mischief in the first degree. Okay. I have the charging document here if anybody's interested.
It is geographically interesting. Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it was Monday when we were talking about House Bill 405 with my friend here. And we were talking about airplanes, and it looks like in this bill here, in the governor's bill anyway, that you address person tampers with an oil and gas pipeline or supporting facility or an airplane or a helicopter with reckless disregard for harm to others.
Yes.
So in this case, again, if something happened to an airplane, more than likely the feds would take first action. And then what this allows us to do is to also pursue it. Am I understanding this correctly?
That's correct. If causing damage, tampering with an airplane or a helicopter is prosecuted by the federal government, we are forbidden by law to prosecute the same act.
But it sounds like with the pipeline incident you just mentioned, we're also prosecuting the guy as well as the feds.
The feds are prosecuting him for being a convicted felon in possession of a firearm. They are not prosecuting him for damaging the pipeline. We're prosecuting him for damaging the pipeline.
Okay.
Might have been different if the guy would have been from somewhere else instead of one of our own citizens.
There's on that point, there's nothing, although our statute says that we won't be the second to prosecute, there's nothing that says that we can be the first and allow the feds to be the second. The feds aren't as constrained as we are.
Through the chair, that's correct. The federal government can do so.
And going back to the case that we had the other day, I mean, it makes sense sometimes if you had, for example, a tricky prosecution, the state might opt to go first in order to work the bugs out and the prosecution sort of take a dry run at it, and then the feds could go next.
Through the chair, I guess that's a possibility. It's highly unlikely. A lot of the ferry-type crimes we send to the federal government in hopes that they will do something, or other crimes, they're not as malleable, they're not as cooperative as we thought.
But I think, you know, the Rodney King prosecution is an instance where that happened. Wasn't it?
I'm not sure which went first, actually.
But the state of California went first. They didn't succeed, and then the federal government pursued a case and prevailed.
You could be right. I don't recall.
That's California.
Okay. We were discussing the issue of the definition of substance, Representative Berkowitz. Did you shed any light on that?
The dictionary definition is long, but it in essence means the essential matter.
Right. Sounds like a very fine definition to me.
Change the dictionary.
Right. However, it doesn't appear to shine a lot of light on this.
Do you know what substance means, Mr. Chair, in common usage? Because that'll work in the law, too.
I understand that. But it also means a peanut butter cheesecake, too.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Krukesh.
How do you take the word and in the whole sphere of what we're trying to do here, because when you look at it and it talks about terroristic threat in the first degree, you certainly don't think about a peanut butter sandwich. And you can't take it out of context like that.
True. However, the modifiers, chemical and biological, certainly get your attention. Representative Berkowitz.
Looking at this, the construction of the state's definition where chemical or biological substance means a material that is harmful to the health of the person. Harmful to the health of the person goes to define chemical or biological. Substance, the way I read this, and if I can remember my sentence diagramming, substance means a material.
Or we could say a harmful substance. At the very least. Any discussion on this? I'm open.
I'm listening. I haven't come up with anything better than I've heard so far.
Representative Coghill.
I think the chemical or biological always is going to be part of the discussion, so can we just say those and any substance with the intent? And so at least that way we have a direction of intent in statute that gives some idea of what we're looking at, but there might be some other substance that would fall just outside of them, but we do have to say or any, and allow that, or does that become the exception?
Could it be a natural substance that doesn't fit those descriptions?
Because I agree that we might have a nuclear substance that might fall, or we might have some substance that might fall out of those two categories, I suppose, but if we have those two categories there, and or any substance with the intent of whatever the intention is, At least that's a parameter, for what it's worth.
Okay, I suspect it should evaluate every substance has chemical properties.
Okay. And in terms of the restitution provision on subsection C of section 2, Representative Berkowitz, the state has indicated that they prefer to see that in the restitution section. Is that right, Ms. Carbonetti?
Well, all sentencing provisions are in Title 12, and we can look at it and see if it covers this, but it, and or and if it doesn't, we could draft it to be included in 1255.
Right. Because I can see, particularly if there's a threat and there is expenses incurred, there would be an appropriate restitution, right? But
it would help on the fiscal note too.
Oh,
ever mindful of that.
How is that?
Yeah.
What fiscal note? I don't see the notes we have on 328 are zero, aren't they?
I think there are a couple that are indeterminate.
Or indeterminate. Right.
I think it's got finance before.
No.
No, it doesn't.
Well,
so
I'd say.
So far, we're it.
Oh. Representative McGuire's budget.
Yeah, Liesl says. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Oh, really? 350, yeah.
Mm.
Well, then perhaps you want to roll hers into the governor's bill.
Good thought.
Well,
just to expedite the process.
In order to make some progress here, Representative Berkowitz, you want to do a wrap-up on your amendment here before we have a vote?
No. I think people understand what I'm trying to do. And
well, let me just speak to your amendment then. Having spent a good part of an hour beating it to death here, I'm leaning towards the governor's side, and so I'm going to be voting against it.
I'm sure some of my friends will be staying with me, though.
Not that we shouldn't adopt some of it, though. any other comments?
Go ahead.
Representative James.
Mr. Chairman, I don't feel really comfortable with what we just went through. That we know, any of us, exactly what we've done.
That's why I'm voting no.
And so, you know, I would suggest that you put together the discussion that we've had in a reasonable manner and come back with the CS and let us discuss it.
I know, we do have an amendment on the table in front of us.
Okay, then I can vote now on that as well.
And then we can discuss a little more here. Right, that's my intention, to come back with a CS. I'm trying to get a little bit of a hint about what did you guys like.
Yeah.
Representative Coghill.
Well, there's a couple things I like about it. First of all, I like the idea of going back to Title 12 on payback. I like
right.
that.
Yeah.
I like the idea of having the false report right up there. It should be a high bar, because it seems like much of terrorist threats are using that very, very substance, the very threat as part of their ace card. So I kind of like that. I'm not too sure, I'd go for it, but I probably would vote for the amendment just to continue that vein, even though I know we have a two-tiered system already set up in this bill. I think that we're doing in the bill, basically in a variety of ways, kind of the same thing that this amendment is trying to do, and that is to up that level. And I probably would stick with them on it.
Well, let me just say here, well, I guess one of my problems is in the first degree is you have the false report that you give intentionally. In the second one, you have a false report you give knowingly. Well, I tell you what, splitting the difference between whether it was an intentional or knowing act, and trying to make that distinction when you're even charging somebody is going to be difficult, I think. Representative Berkowitz.
Yeah, the distinction has to go to the effect. I mean, you have to intend the consequence with the A felony or with the B felony. You don't have to intend, you just have to know what you're doing for the C felony.
Mm-hmm.
If I tell you that there's a bomb and I don't really care what happens, that's a C felony. But if I tell you that there's a bomb because I want you to clear out of the building, that's a B felony. And I mean, I could come up with a different example.
I'm sure, let's see. Until you were apprehended, if you were having made a bomb threat, mm-hmm. how could you discern whether or not what your intentions were?
There's the totality of circumstances. You would look to things.
Well, isn't a duck, a bomb threat's a bomb threat? Do you know what the motivations were?
Well, if someone had written a long tract about how they hated a particular institution and they plotted and schemed for years.
So you got to be a Unabomber to get a first degree. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that would be one way of getting there.
It's an awful... I mean, to me, it's making that line of demarcation between the distinction between the two is a difficult one. I mean, you were sporting.
That's why I say it. When I meant playing the ace card, and that is, they know what the outcome is going to be, so they're going to play the threat with the same outcome, basically, as actually pulling off a bomb, if you will. Maybe just less carnage, you know. I mean, but the effect that they're looking for, and that's why I tend to agree with them. I'm open to the discussion. I understand that when something is done, it's easier to say this was done. But when we're talking about terrorism, from everything I've seen over the last few months, certainly what is done is easy to figure out. But some of the threats that have come in preceding days after September 11th. Have been significant, you know, and that has been played as a card to damage people, whether it's either in morale or the ability to defend, or to cause expense. And so, you know, that's why I was kind of agreeing with that discussion. I think that, you know, that's some of the nature of terrorism is awful hard to define in this kind of statute. I understand that. My thinking was.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative James.
Well, you know, this isn't really a true analogy, but it's one of the things that's always bothered me a long time is, say you're driving down the road and you're not careful and you do a 180 or even a 360 in the road and there's nobody there and you don't hit anybody and you get in your car and you go on and you have no problem, right? But if you do that and somebody's coming and you hit them and you kill somebody, you're guilty of reckless driving and other sins. And so... whether or not it's a good idea to hold you not so accountable when nobody gets hurt when somebody gets hurt is a very fine line, I think. And I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Well, you know, I can be convinced
that... the specific case, would I really be able to know how I felt about that?
I can be convinced that making a false report is just as damaging as... unfalse report in this particular instance, but how we draft the statutes to make at least a practical application of them clear is, I think, my job as chairman here. And I'm not sure we're doing that with the language we have right now.
Mr. Chair, I just had a question because I share some of the same concerns here as to which route is the better route to go. And I was wondering if either one of these are based on any other states. Any other states have dealt with this that maybe we're copying from, or is this just our own original thinking here?
This is an amalgam of our thinking and the model penal code. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough time to do all the research that I think could have clarified what other states are doing. But, there's a lot of people all across the country thinking about these issues nowadays.
Right.
I think it is going to behoove us to see what they're coming up with.
Ms. Carbonini, do you have a response?
I would just say, when looking at the model penal code, terroristic threats, this was the basis of our Criminal Code Revision Commission in the late 70s in enacting terroristic threatening. We used the model penal code for a number of crimes when we were writing it, and this statute is really similar to terroristic threatening in current law, but it's only threats. And the terroristic threatening in the first degree that's in the governor's bill is acts. Acts that, you know, are threatening.
And Mr. Chairman, and I suppose, at what time does a threat become an act? You know, after something happens, I suppose. And that's the I guess, the limit we're trying to figure out. At least in my mind, I am. Because a threat has many ramifications in it right now. And the closer you were going back to September 11th, every threat became a national emergency.
And I'd also point, reading the whole sentence here, it's first degree, if the person sends or delivers, those are actual conduct. But attempts to send or deliver or solicits the sending or delivery, those are actions that are short of the actual act. And so, in many ways, the concept of making a false report, it fits in with that second category of soliciting or attempting to send. In fact, I would suggest it's probably even more aggravated than a solicitation.
I would agree with that.
You could be soliciting and not have anybody that's being solicited. And then suddenly somebody comes along and then voila.
The legal distinction is that if you're soliciting somebody, that means you intend to do the act. What making a false report is intending to make a false report, not to actually do the act of sending. And that's the difference between attempting to deliver and making a false report. That's why an attempt to actually deliver would probably be considered more serious, because you have the thing and you're trying to do it, rather than what you actually intend if you make a false report is make a false report, talk about it, say you're going to do it. And that's the qualitative difference in the conduct.
Oh, see, I flip-flopped over again.
But in terms of the harm to the community, which is one of the things that we're supposed to address in the criminal code, you know, if you actually send a noxious substance, that's bad. If you deliver it, it's bad. There's a consequence to it. If you make a false report on it, it's going to generate a response, a public response. But if you attempt to send or deliver, it could have been intercepted. In which case the public harm is minimized, or if you solicit, a solicitation without it, the act itself is an indication that there was no general harm. I mean, you could solicit an undercover officer. You could attempt to, I mean, that's far short of causing the same kind of harm as a false report, an unintercepted false report or an unverified false report. I guess it's sort of an oxymoron, but...
Well, I'm sure a lot of these are distinct, can be distinguished by the facts, and soliciting is, the danger is the potential danger in soliciting or attempt. I mean, the possibility that it will, in fact, actually be sent, whereas false report is only the words are going to be sent, and the harm may be, depending on the factual situation, more serious in one than another, but those are the distinctions that we make.
Mr. Chairman, just to back up a little bit, how many times do we prosecute under terrorist threatening over against other types of verbal assault?
I think it's much more common to prosecute as assault, an assault for, than terroristic threats, because.
Up till now.
Harassment.
Yeah.
Because we generally prosecute individual people threatening others as an assault, whereas this is terroristic threats is really assault on a large group of people in the public. And let's hope it stays.
Well, and the reason I was asking that is because we do have causing a public inconvenience here, which could happen in a variety of different ways, and I wanted to know that it has to go through this other laundry list before it gets to that larger public inconvenience under C or number three of this A and number three of A.
Well, you have to approve all of the elements of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. If we're missing one, we lose everything.
Right. I just want to make sure of that, I understand that you're going to have to be charged under a certain thing with some degree of certainty that charge is real, but I just wanted to know, what the prosecution field looked like.
Well, as a general rule, a prosecutor has an ethical duty not to bring a charge unless he or she believes that he can prove beyond a reasonable doubt every element of the case, and can't, you know.
But the terrorist activity nowadays seems to be crossing over. It just seems to me that we're edging up to where something could be a terrorist activity quicker than it could be before. And I just want to make sure how far we're going in that. Uh-huh. And even under some of this language, I'm concerned.
Well, the serious public inconvenience is part of our present law in terms of terroristic threatening. So it's not a new concept, and it's not one that's used very often, frankly. I mean, maybe Representative Berkowitz is the only person who's...
Representative Meyer had a personal experience with it.
Right.
So that's two out of six of us in here. So I would say there's 200,000 Alaskans that are impacted.
Not as high profile as two gentlemen on the left. Well, Representative Berkowitz, we need to vote on it, or you can withdraw your amendment, and we can use it in the whole much. What do you want to do?
It would seem to me, Mr. Chair, if you're going to consolidate right. Representative McGuire's and the governor's bill, and we're going to come back and hear it again,
right.
Maybe it'll give us an opportunity to discuss it. And
right. Let's massage that one. Why don't you withdraw your amendment?
I will withdraw the amendment at this time.
At this time, I'd also like to know if you want to go ahead and adopt the administration's amendment.
I would move to adopt the administration's amendment.
Any objections? Seeing none, so adopted. Yes, Counselor?
There's a technical amendment to the amendment.
And what's that?
On the third page, I think it should say a biological or chemical substance. Or imitation of biological or chemical substance.
Oh, conforming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Or. Everybody understand that? Right. On page three of the amendment number two. In the third line here, it says insert a biological striking and inserting or chemical substance or. With that, are there any objections on the motion to adopt amendment number two as amended? Seeing none, we'll adopt amendment number two. I would like to get some direction on what the Senate did in terms of what they did was they took section two of the bill before us, and then they rewrote all the criminal mischief statutes. I have the criminal mischief statute in front of me. Criminal mischief in the first degree is a Class B felony, and it does now include the person intentionally damages an oil and gas pipeline or supporting facility. So what we've done is taken that out of criminal mischief one and created a new crime. Is that right, Ms. Carpenter?
That's correct, in the administration bill.
And so that the Senate, rather than just to adopt this shorthanded method of rewritten the criminal mischief sections, and there's, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 criminal mischief statutes?
In present law, yes. Their version would make it 5.
I see.
5 levels.
5 levels of criminal mischief.
There are 5 levels of misconduct involving a weapon, too. So it's not unprecedented in our statute.
So
you don't know what the rationale was for that?
I do. What their rationale was that it's better public policy and drafting to, instead of making a specific crime, to work with the framework that we have.
Right. And the current criminal mischief in the first has that provisions in it. If we're going to step up above it, that was their thinking.
To keep it, it's more logical to do that. The response is that it's more practical to do it this way in terms of records and
lots of bills. Well, it's four pages of bill.
And in terms of record keeping, the people who keep criminal records, then they have to note the date of the offense so they know the level of the offense. But in a purist sense, I think they took that tact.
Is any opinion on that?
No.
On the CS? We'll draft it that way. See how it comes out.
I was just going to ask, in going to the five different levels, as opposed to this would really be two levels and still have those other levels, or is it one more tier up? Is that what we're doing?
Well, the terroristic threatening sections are on the side. They're not connected to misconduct involving
criminal misconduct. I kind of thought we were.
Would you be actually charged with both the Senate version of criminal misconduct of the first degree and terrorist threatening? Mm-hmm. If you shot a hole at the pipeline? I don't think, why not?
I don't believe, not with terroristic threatening, I don't believe. But
if you called up and threatened, then you went and did it.
Those were two different things.
So you'd have, those are two crimes then.
Yeah. Right.
If you called in advance, if you make reservations to shoot a hole in the line, then it's two crimes instead of one. Okay. Also, I was informed by staff on page 3 when they had the food and water, the Senate added air in all those lit iterations. So that sounds like
all the Greek elements.
Right. All the Greek elements. And let's see, we have what else was there? Well, what I'll do, I'll work with rather than appoint a subcommittee, I'll work with Representative Berkowitz's office on fine tuning some of these things.
I'm looking forward to reading the final draft.
Yeah, well, I am. I'm still a little hung up on this, whether we want to put false reporting in the first degree.
Then I'll tell you what I think of it.
Well, what's going to happen, Andy, is we're going to end up with two crimes and one will never be used, is what I'm afraid of.
Hopefully that happens with the whole criminal code.
Yeah, well, that's, you know.
Well, hang the bastards, you know. You know.
That doesn't seem to
be a capital punishment. Yeah.
Isn't that what happens to those of us who have to work here in the Capitol? Or?
We do have a new, there is new standards for capital punishment now being drafted. Yes, anyway. But with that, we'd love to have your input on this. I'm sure Heather will love this little assignment. Maybe we should appoint a subcommittee or it'll never get done.
Excuse me.
Oh, okay. I'll withdraw that statement. With that, the Judiciary Committee is adjourned at 2:45, believe it or not.